Welcome to the Death Care Marketing Show.
Hi, I'm Mary Barnett, and this is the Death Care Marketing Show. We talk real funeral home marketing, strategy, automations, and compassion without the fluff. I've been doing this for over 37 years, and I'm bringing you conversations with people who are actually making an impact in this space. So you can see what's working and what's not, and what's worth doing now. So let's get into it. Okay, so here's what's happening. Most funeral homes rely on the same things they've always relied on: word of mouth, obituaries, at-need calls, which means when someone dies. And listen, those things still matter, but they keep you in a reactive position. You're waiting for the call instead of becoming the place that people already trust before that moment ever comes. And this is where most people get stuck, because they don't know what to say, they don't want to feel salesy, and they're not sure how to even start those conversations. So they say nothing. And the families, they go to Google, or at least they wait until they're in crisis. And that's a much harder place to serve from. So here's the truth that I really want you to anchor. Families don't choose the funeral home they see first. They choose the one they already trust. And the trust is built before the need. Bottom line, funeral homes that teach win. And that's what I'm really excited about talking about in today's conversation. I'm joined by Pastor Rick Craig, the creator of When It's Time series. And what I love about what he's doing is this: he's not marketing, he's guiding. His books walk through 13 real, practical end-of-life realities, both before the need and the time of loss, with insights from experts and a focus on helping families take the next step with clarity and confidence. And honestly, that's exactly what families are looking for, right? He has 38 years of success in developing and leading organizations, both in the private sector and in ministry, and has been an ordained Christian pastor for over 26 years, with a focus in church leadership as a campus pastor and the ministries of pastoral care, local and global missions, and discipleship. His primary ministry today includes speaking engagements and seminars, introducing his book. In fact, he has a brand new book out that we're going to talk about today, officiating funerals and memorials, and grief counseling. His education includes degrees from Vanguard University and Golden West College, with a life coaching certification from Western Seminary in Rockland, California. Rick is married to Lauren and has a son, daughter-in-law, and two grandchildren, Isabella and Matthew. And Rick and his wife live in Fairfield, California. So without further ado, let's bring up Pastor Rick. And welcome to the show, Pastor.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it, Mary. Pleasure to be here.
Oh, I'm so glad you joined me. We've actually known each other for a little while, and I actually have your books. We're going to talk a little bit about your new book, too. But I just absolutely love the concept between when it's time. And you don't just have a book. You actually also have a leader's guide, and you have a workbook that is so cool, because it actually allows people to run their own groups to help facilitate this. But you also do speaking. So again, let's start with, what made you feel like people needed this kind of guidance?
Well, I think that almost with everything, when you have personal experience, you bring that into whatever you're working on. 20 years ago, my brother died from Agent Orange exposure in Vietnam. Oh. 1 year later, my wife died from metastatic breast cancer. 6 months later, my mother died. So you put those three together, and all of a sudden, you're not only experiencing other people's loss, but when you go through it personally, it changes everything. And it changed everything for me, the way that I pastor, the way that I meet people, the way that I counsel with people. And it also started the whole series, When It's Time.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. So personal experience, you're not just an expert with, you know, being certified, but also personally, and that goes along better. So that is so powerful. And I see that all the time. People just, they don't avoid planning because they don't care. They avoid because they don't know how to start. Did you find that when your family members passed away, that you guys weren't prepared for the end?
It's true. And my brother, when he passed away, I was not knowledged on the military benefits, but I became knowledged, but it was after he died. And I was like any other family, starting to search. And there's that sense of time, the pressure on that. And when you start having pressure and you're doing research is when you start making mistakes, because you're just reaching at the straws. When my wife died, we already had all the plans, the trust, everything done, had the funeral home, everything was ready. But okay. I still learned. I learned the emotional part of, yes, I'm now making the decisions, even though we had agreed upon anything or everything. It was me personally involved. Then I learned emotionally what it's like to be involved when you lose someone that close to you. When my mom died, my dad had dementia. I took care of everything. And so again, when you're stepping out in 18 months, losing three family members, you not only learn from what you've learned from other people in the past, but when you personally are in those shoes, that's when you learn all the details that no one could ever explain to you. So it's a hard lesson to learn.
Yeah, it's a club you didn't want to be invited to, right?
That's right. Very true. Very true.
Yeah. So overall, what you've seen, and you mentioned that you also officiate funerals, military mm-hmm. as well. I'd love for you to share. In fact, let me ask you that. Tomorrow, you're officiating two funerals, you said?
One tomorrow at Sacramento Valley National Cemetery, and that will be my 142nd military funeral. And wow. I've officiated 139 civilian and law enforcement funerals throughout the Bay Area in the last 5.5 years. So that's about 280 services in 5.5 years. And I thought I knew a lot when I started to do this, when I started to get the call from funeral homes and mortuaries, and then the military bases. I thought I knew, well, let me put it this way, I didn't know as much as I thought until you step into it once again. And then you start really learning, what is this all about when it comes to military and working with funeral homes, the difference of that versus a mortuary, families that are dysfunctional, families that are healthy, families that are playing, families that had done nothing whatsoever because they chose not to. And the death was either a murder, an accident, a stroke. I've come across a whole lot in the last 5.5 years.
Well, on that note, what do you think people are most unprepared for when it comes to those end of life decisions?
Let's take one step back from that. I used to believe, and I would have bet every dime I had if I was a betting person, the reason people don't enter into the conversation about death and planning is because they didn't want to talk about it. That has changed. I am 100% convinced now that the majority of people don't enter into the conversation because they don't know how. That was the other reason for the books. If you don't know what you're talking about or how to find information or feel comfortable doing it, you're not going to go there. You're going to avoid it as long as you can. So here's another fact for you, then I'll answer your question. Okay. So if I ask people, what percentage of people have done planning? And so when there's a death, it's like putting the key in the ignition of the car, turning it, car starts, and you drive away. And the answer is, and this is from a lot of pastors, chaplains, funeral directors, about 5% of the people in America actually do planning, any extensive planning for their death. Let that sink in for a minute.
5%.
5%. So the first thing that happens when there's a death is panic and trauma and grief. So when I get a call from a funeral home, maybe a church, whatever, and we start talking, what I almost always hear is, what do I do now? And I know what they're asking, but I ask the question, what do you mean by that? And they'll say, for example, a spouse might say, I don't know if I get the retirement money from my husband. Question: I don't say this, but why don't you know? That's part of planning. And then all the questions start. We'll spend an hour or two I'll just be answering questions by things that they should have known by simple conversation and research. But that gets into 5% of the people don't have that problem because they look ahead. They talk about it, the research. Right. So the answer to the question is, why do people have these problems? Because they choose not to research. That's
it.
Very sad.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Cause that was my next question. Do you feel like people are actually looking for this kind of guidance, but don't know where to go? Yes, obviously because they don't want to feel stupid, right? They don't decide to do that. Wow. So if a funeral home wanted to better serve the community before their need, how could they use something like your framework or your approach to start those conversations?
Well, what I have found, and I've worked with funeral homes, there's a couple of different things they'll do. They'll send out a flyer, and they'll buy lunch at a local restaurant and come and listen to them talk about it.
Right.
And that's okay. They get out there. So if they have 20 people, they might have two people in a pre-need situation, have a conversation.
Right.
But I think most part people are they're just curious. They want to hear what they're saying. Right. Maybe they're looking for a free lunch.
I was just going to say that.
Possible. I mean, I've gotten to some because I'm curious to see what the funeral directors say.
Yeah.
And then there's other means of reaching out. It's flyers in the mail, but all that is not personal. What I have found, and I've worked with a couple of churches where we've invited funeral homes from the area, or one in particular maybe, into the church and do a seminar there where the people that are members of the church can invite friends and family members and guests and try and get 30, 40, 50, 60 people there.
Sure.
Hard to do. It's a lot of promoting, again, because we get back to, do I really want to have this conversation? Am I really going to find the information I need from here? But right. When they do that, it becomes personal. It becomes, we'll say that it's endorsed by the church, endorsed by the people that invite friends. And right. Then it's a more casual setting, and it's a Q&A time versus right. A sales pitch over lunch. And that's a big
yes.
difference.
Yeah. Yes. Because I know a lot of funeral homes I work with, typically it's the pre-need company, the insurance company that puts these lunch and learns on, they call them. And right. Then it's basically, you know, a sales pitch, and people don't want to be sold to. But what's really nice about what you do, and I think you'd be an excellent partner for, pre-need companies, but you're completely separate, is that you go along through the framework and let people fill this out just so they have it. And they feel that peace of mind. It's almost like something you actually, I was reading in your book, you consider it, and I agree, that it's more of planning as a gift to their family. Can you expand a little bit about why this is a gift and what changes for families when those conversations happen ahead of time?
Yeah, here's a phrase that everybody needs to write down, write it on their mirror in the bathroom, look at it every morning, and where it becomes part of who you are. And the phrase is, when you leave this earth, you're either going to leave your plan or your problem.
Ooh.
You don't have a plan, you left a problem.
Yes.
And I'll give you an idea. So I did a seminar in Napa last year at a very, very large retirement home.
Okay.
And during the seminar, there's this couple in the very back, and he was boisterous to his wife and kept complaining about, why are we here? You know, we don't need to listen to this. And everything was negative, everything. I got to the point where I got pretty frustrated because he was disruptive. So I stopped and I said to him, do you love your wife? And he just looked at me and he said, of course I love my wife. And I said, everything you've said to her so far is about what you want. You haven't asked her what she wants, and you want to leave. Do you love your wife, really? And he said, that's a really good point. He said, I apologize for being disruptive. And he sat there and listened to the last. The seminar I did yesterday, there was 11 men there. At the very end, we were talking about the 5%ers. And I said, who here is a 5%er? Not one raised their hand. I said, who here is in the 50% plan? Not one of them raised their hand.
Wow.
So is 5% a real number? It is. It really is. So when you think about, you're either going to leave your plan or you're going to leave your problem is, you just died, and your spouse or somebody in the family is going to have to pick up the pieces and start from right there in their grief. And they're going to have to look for a trust. They're going to have to look for a funeral home because that hasn't been discussed already. All that is brand new at the worst time in your life.
Right.
But it happens every day. It happens probably 50% of the funerals that I do. Family had no plan, even though the person may have been sick for months. No plan, dies that day, and it's like, oh, I think I need to find a funeral home. Oh, here's another one. Person dies in the hospital, and what they should know when they enter the hospital in that kind of condition is, do you have a morgue? And the reason being is because if they do not, as they're starting to unhook all the wires and tubes from the patient, they'll look at the survivor standing there and say, I'm sorry, but you have 6 hours to move your loved one because we don't have a morgue. So you talk about pressure to find a funeral home and make arrangements. In 6 hours with no plan, that happens every day.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. I didn't share this with you, but I've actually been building a program, an app, I don't know what you want to call it, but it actually allows people to do the pre-planning, and it sits with the funeral home so they can come back to the funeral home when they're ready. They don't have to pay for anything. They don't have to pre-planned with like an insurance program. So I think you and I need to talk offline of how to make sure that we're, maybe we can partner with something, because I think that it is so important. I think people always think, well, I'll deal with it tomorrow. I'll deal with it tomorrow. Right. And sometimes tomorrow doesn't come. Like you said, there could be an accident, you know, life happens. And it really is a gift. I've been through, you were mentioning your family members. I had 18 people die in 18 months in my life. And I've been to over 80 funerals in the last 10 years. I think it's a little bit more now, but, and these are people I knew and love, and I have seen the gamut as well. And it is tragic when the family in their heavy grief has to like figure out what they think their loved one wanted. And then sometimes they're like, well, they're gone. I guess I'll take over. And then it's just like all the something else I didn't share with you offline, but I was wondering, have you found that, in my belief, a service is really important, a celebration of life, a memorial service for people who just want to like get it over with and they do a direct cremation and they're done. I feel like, and a lot of people I talk to in the funeral industry, they feel like there's no closure. They're doing a disservice by not encouraging the families to have some form of memorial to help their family down that journey of grief. Do you agree that a memorial service or celebration of life is important?
100%. In fact, I've officiated funerals for people that died 5 years ago, and the family never did a service. And the family member who passed away never left the plan, so they didn't do a service. 5 years later, they said, still a void. What happened? Nothing ever happened afterward. There was no closure. So absolutely, yeah. Whether the service is in the backyard, whether the service is at a church or a funeral home or somewhere, but just a gathering of people to honor that sacred time together, which is another step moving forward in their grief.
Yeah.
And a good time to explain the difference of grief and mourning. Grief can happen when you have a loss of job, a loss of a family member, a loss of a pet. I mean, a loss. Sure. Mourning is the expression of that grief. For example, it's often very normal when parents will lose a child is they don't change the bedroom of the child. It becomes a shrine, if you will. That's part of mourning. Wearing black is part of mourning. Having a service is part of the mourning. It's the expression of the grief. So a lot of people will maybe mourn, but they don't grieve, or they grieve and they don't mourn. You put those two together, and it's a natural step. In fact, in grief is normal, it's natural, and it's absolutely necessary to continue to move on in a healthy way. If you don't, when it resurfaces again, and it will, it'll be much worse than the very beginning.
Amen. I say all the time that grief is just love with nowhere to go.
Yeah,
and have deep grief, it's because you had deep love. Mm-hmm. And it's an honor to grieve, because I have actually shivers. Like if someone didn't matter anything to you, you aren't going to grieve to them. But if they matter to you, it's going to hit you like a wave. We do with our clients, we do a lot of like grief workshops and different events, like painting events to help, like praise painting and things to help them through their grief. And there was a gentleman that came and his wife died suddenly. She said, I am tired. I'm going to go take a nap. He went to the other room to watch a TV show or something. And he thought it was odd that she hadn't got up. It was like an hour or so. And he thought, oh, it's middle of the day. Like she must be really tired. He went back to the room and she had passed during her nap. And they were not prepared at all. And he was a doctor. And he still 2 years later feels grief that he didn't save her. He's like, I'm a doctor, you know? And he was also a military man. I know you deal with a lot of veterans. And he said, I need this to be over. I need a checklist of what to go through. I'm very linear. I need to know what to do. I've been through the stages of grief and I'm not over it because it keeps hitting me like a wave. What do I do? And he was like looking for a checklist that the grief counselor could give him. And she was like,
both of them. I'm with you.
Like, what is that word? And she says, it's going to continue to come up and you have to work through it. It'll get easier, but I'm so sorry. It's not over. And he was like, it's been 2 years. So I'm sure you see that all the time.
Yeah, it's very true. In fact, I'm doing a service tomorrow at Sac Valley National Cemetery. It's for the most decorated veteran that I've ever done a service for. He was a sergeant first class. I buried commanders, lieutenant commanders, colonels, lieutenant colonels. This guy had more medals and awards than anybody I've ever done before. It's incredible. Vietnam, he had 11 campaign medals, meaning he was there 11 times. Korea, he was there 4 times, short tours, but 4 times. More clusters and oak leaf clusters than I've ever seen before. Mm. And do you know how many people are going to be at his funeral tomorrow? Me.
What?
Me. Me and the honor guard. That's it. He had no family, nobody recognized. So he would be not unclaimed, but he had no connections with anybody. So again, we get back to planning. How many people in this world are that esteemed, that kind of record, that kind of commitment in his life, and has nobody whatsoever listed on there as a contact? Oh. Doesn't make sense, does it?
No.
So I'm going to be talking to the heir to honor this veteran who deserved 26 years of service, 2 wars, multiple awards and ribbons and medals.
Wow.
And I'm going to be talking to the heir, honor guard, and I'll do a full service for him out of respect for him.
Yes. What a blessing. Well, that kind of, even though this wasn't part of my run of show, I want to step back for a second and talk about your new book, because mm-hmm. that kind of ties in how he obviously spent his whole life serving our country, which is a wonderful, honorable thing. But he obviously didn't have a balanced life if he didn't have a family, or if he didn't have relationships that would actually want to come to his funeral. So you wrote a book about your fourth quarter, I think you said. Mm-hmm. Can we talk a little bit about that book and why it's so important? Because it goes hand in hand with your About Time. But I think it's important that we address that book as well, because I think it's really powerful.
So what I did is I went out and found the best of the best to co-author with me.
Okay.
So, for example, the first chapter is written by 2 psychologists that are a friend of mine, Dr. Charity and Dr. John. They talk about emotional health. Okay. And obviously, they're psychologists. And in there, they identify certain parts of your life that you need to go back and look at, called hindrances on why you can't move forward. And we'll call those sore spots. So there are events in your life that happened negatively and they impacted you, and you carry that sore spot with you.
Okay.
They have multiple means in that chapter to do self-evaluation in order to illuminate where you are in your life emotionally.
Okay.
And the reason I put them rather than something I wrote in the first chapter, because if you can't start emotionally healthy, you're not going to finish emotionally healthy.
Right.
So that chapter is very first to focus. The second one is relational health. We'll call it relational richness. And I wrote that one with 11 virtues in that chapter for us to look at relationships that we have. Now, nobody's perfect, so nobody has all 11 virtues. But if you've got people in your life that are toxic, that are hostile, that you keep walking away saying, I just had more life taken out of me. Why am I still with this person talking to this person as a friend?
Right.
So that chapter, same thing. It explains the virtues, why it's important to have healthy people in your life. And there's a diagram there called the concentric circle. And the very middle of that is the inner circle. And that's where you've got the 4 or 5 friends that you're going to do life with, and you're going to do anything to help them. They're going to do the same for you.
Right.
And then you have friends outside of that concentric circle, and then acquaintances on the far part. So that particular chapter is about, you need to identify who your friends are, because I think most of us lived with our parents saying, you will be who your friends are, right?
Yeah, the 5 people you hang around. Well, before you continue with the chapters, the overall book, I think we were talking about this before we went live, is basically to have all these things in place so that you're living your best last quarter, that you're healthy emotionally, physically, spiritually, so you're enjoying that last quarter. So at your funeral, you've made an impact in your life and you're leaving it all. Like I heard the quote, I want to die empty. You're right. Mm-hmm. You've given it all away. You've made your legacy lives on. And you're used up, because as one of my funeral home clients says, he says, you know, you never see a U-Haul behind a hearse.
That's right. Very true. Very true.
Yeah.
So when you look at this book in chapter title,
hold it up so we can see it.
chapter titles being emotionally healthy, relationally rich, physically fit, financially free, spiritually anchored, vocationally aligned. When you start looking at all four of those, and you start looking at the fact that in America, for the male, fourth quarter starts at age 56. For the female, age 60. Most of us think, well, it's 75, 80. No. And for American male, average age of death is 76, and for a woman is 80. So when you think about in your mid-50s, you've started the fourth quarter. Right. This book is really good for third quarter and fourth quarter.
Sure.
So one of the catchphrase for this would be is, as you enter the fourth quarter, you have to make a decision and choose not to decline, but to refine.
Ooh, that is good.
Yep.
You take to refine, not decline.
Not decline. So you take the best of what you've learned and refine it into like gold. They have to purify it. They have to melt it down to make it better.
Right.
Is when you start refining, is you start living a different life. Now, some people choose to rest and decline. Other people choose to make a difference, and they'll go out and they'll start taking vacations, maybe a second job, maybe a hobby, whatever. Most people are, those are good, but are they emotionally healthy? Are they relationally rich?
Yeah.
So you put this whole thing together in book number four, and you should have a fourth quarter that is refined and very healthy, very good.
I love that. So for the funeral home list owners listening, what are one or two simple things that they could do this month to start to bring this kind of education to their community, to get them to pre-plan, even without paying like insurance, but get them pre-plan and also plan for their best last quarter?
If I was in the funeral business, mortuary, I would be calling churches, community centers for seniors, because every city has one or two. I'd be calling them, and I'd be looking for group gatherings, because you need to have a champion within. So if you call a church, in multiple churches coming together, that's even better, where you've got 100 or 150 people. Yeah. You find a champion within. There's always a champion who says, here I am, put me to work.
Right.
And you start pulling that together with that kind of that charisma and the contacts that they have. Then you get people there that want to be there. They're not there to have a lunch. You can provide lunch, but they're not there for that. They're there to listen.
Right.
And you have people that will trust the pastors at the church to do that. In the community center, you're going to have the regulars show up, and it's going to be their job to invite people that they're their friends. You won't have the connection that you do within a church. So I think the more public gatherings that you have where there's an invitation given, personal invitation given, and a reason why they're doing it, I think you're going to get more attention to that.
Yeah.
Again, doing lunches at the local restaurant to have 15 people show up and have two say, sure, I'll talk to you about pre-need.
Right.
Is that really beneficial for the time and money? I don't know.
Yeah. But bottom line, what you're suggesting is educating their community.
Absolutely.
By educating and showing them how they can better their own lives, right? So they end well, right? They end strong. Because we're all going to end. I mean, that's the thing. I think a lot of people, another reason I think people don't pre-plan is they think, oh, I'll never die. Like in their head, they know they're going to logically. But in their head, they're like, no, I'm never going to die. Why would I die? Like, I'm going to live forever. And so they put off some of this planning. But I love that when a funeral home can actually be of service and show them that, you know, they can live well, they can end well, they will be the top of mind when that time comes, right? So we're going to segue into the next segment, which is Did You Know? So I want to pause here and share that families who pre-plan are less stressed, statistically, make clear decisions and feel more confident in the process. But most family don't do it, not because they don't want to, because no one is guiding them. And so that's why I think that this topic is so important. And so thank you so much for dedicating so many books to this. We wanted to have some practical try this for our funeral homes, because again, this show is a resource for funeral homes, so they can be more present with their families when they need them by having all these things done in their community. So they are the people that they think of when the need comes up. We want to make this super simple. So if you're a funeral homeowner and you're listening and you're thinking, okay, how can I actually do this? So here are a few ideas you can start with. So as Rick said, host a simple monthly workshop around planning. Create short videos answering real questions that families have. One of my clients, we host a show called Dialogues About Death, and people are morbidly curious, like what happens when you die? What happens in the cremation center? Like what did all these things happen? And when you share things that are real, people lean in, they want to know, right? Mm-hmm. Offering a planning guide like Rick's book, right? Offer a planning guide that they can help them take that first step. More ideas or partner with, like Rick said, partner with local churches or community groups. And then this is important, follow up with people who engage, because that's where most funeral homes drop the ball. They start the conversation, but they don't have a system to continue it. So it's really important that we have a system. So that's something we provide, but a lot of our clients, they keep it in notebooks, they have some kind of online CMS, but it's important that they take the time to follow up, because that's when people really feel heard and really feel seen. So I love that you're encouraging this, this, Rick. Okay, so this is the segment, and you sent me some really good notes on this. So this is a segment called The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. So I want you to tell me, and you could start off with good, bad, and ugly, whichever order you want, because more funeral homes are starting to realize that they need to connect with family before the need, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the big shift. They don't know what to say, so they stay quiet, but families are left to figure this out on their own, right? So Rick, tell me an example of what the, like when you see a funeral home doing it right, what would be a good example?
One of the things that I've known from talking to multiple funeral homes is they don't necessarily push pre-need very much, because the pre-need is a set price and it could last for 5, 10, 15, 20 years. And they don't want to venture into that because of, call it, loss of income. So they would prefer in most cases to deal with at need. And I get that, totally get it. But in pre-need, as you said earlier, Mary, in your opening, is that people tend to go to funeral homes because they trust them. They've had experience with them before.
Right.
So to do a pre-need is you're not only going to get that family or that person or that couple to sign up, but they're probably going to talk to them about friends also. So it's a good way in a pre-need. Yes, you don't make as much money. But it's a good way to market because your name is out there. Right. I think that's very important. When it comes to making a contact with somebody in the community, it's better to do it in a pre-need than an at-need. And right. The reason being, obviously, is it's more relaxed. You have a conversation, you talk, versus right. at-need, they come in and they're not going to remember anything the funeral director says anyway. Right. They're going to make multiple phone calls. Do we talk about that? I get right. that all the time.
Yeah.
So I think for funeral directors that I met, they're wonderful people. A lot of them, it's their ministry. They're believers.
Yes. 100%.
They are totally committed to it. But I think it's a big miss when they're not selling the idea of pre-need and getting out there in large groups where they can have the conversation. And if the concern is, I want them to trust us and know us, then do it in a casual pre-need situation with a large group of people. Right. Where they can go home and talk about it and digest it and say, you know what, one day when we need to, that's where we're going to go.
Right.
I think that's a natural.
And the good and the bad and the ugly, we can kind of combine them. Has there been a situation that you've seen it where it's gone wrong? Like something terrible happened that we want to make sure our funeral homes don't do?
Yep. Unfortunately, I've experienced a few of those. And that would be as you have the funeral director dealing with the family in an at-need situation. Halfway through it, something happens, that person's not there, they're on vacation, they're sick, they hand it off, and the ball is dropped. And I've seen that quite a bit. And it ranges from maybe going to not set up on the graveside, could be that the funeral is going to be inside in the chapel, that is not ready, could be that the death certificate was promised, never showed up, they have to postpone the funeral. That will ruin any reputation, good reputation that you had with the family. So if there's going to be commitments made and passed or handed off to somebody else, it's got to be done really well, because that's where the ball is going to drop.
Exactly. Because sadly, people remember the bad stuff better more than the.
It's just like when I do a funeral, the only thing they're going to truly remember a grieving family is if I make a mistake.
Right. It's human nature. Yeah. Sadly. Right.
And that's why I print out all my messages to give to the family, along with the books. I give every family a whole set of books, because I want them to hear or read what I said, because they won't remember it unless I call the person wrong by the wrong name.
Right.
And I want them to have the material, because now they're survivors. And if they've never invested into making a plan, now they can go ahead and start the plan.
Wow. That's really powerful. So what you said actually, you know, hits home to me, because we've been in marketing for 37 years and we know the importance of having a system that things don't slip through the cracks. It doesn't have to be online, but as long as your funeral home has a very specific protocol that everyone follows, so nothing does slip through the cracks, because that's what people do remember, right? Yeah. You want to be able to have it, be able to answer questions, respond with compassion, keep conversations intact, so they don't have that, well, he said this and she said that. If you can have something that keeps everything together, which is great. And then also, I kind of like breezed through this when we were talking about this, because Rick, you obviously are a very busy guy. You do a lot of things and you can't always show up physically, even though you said that's your favorite, because people really connect. But a funeral home can buy your workbooks, right? Mm-hmm. And there's a leader guide here that they can run their own in-person funeral home. They could always bring you in virtually or even physically. But what's great about your books is that you can literally, with this leader guide, they can lead their own session that is a pre-planning, even without the insurance part, just to get people thinking about it. Because if they pre-plan with your books before the event, they're going to come back when they're ready to buy the insurance, you know, if they don't have it already, because they have that connection. Because as I said earlier, the funeral home that educates wins.
And I'll tell you how that leader guide came about. When I was doing seminars, I was contacted by Hoag Hospital in Newport Beach.
Oh.
And they asked me to be on a webinar with them for training. It's supposed to be 45 people.
Okay.
And to get their extra credit units for their licenses.
Sure.
When I signed on, there was 145 people, not 45. Oh. Supposed to go a half hour, went for an hour and a half.
Oh, wow.
When I finished, they asked me if I would drive down to Newport Beach and meet with them. From all that, they said, would you write something for us? Because we want to start inviting the community into Hoag to do training to do exactly what you do. Because I did a sample training session for them, like what I do.
Wow.
And so I wrote the book. So Hoag Hospital uses it. They invite their community in, both in San Diego and South Orange County. But now churches are using it for small groups. Hospice organizations have used it for training for their people. So
wow.
it's like me sitting there talking to them without all the peripheral stuff.
Yeah.
So that's how that book came about.
Oh, that's fantastic. I just thought it was absolutely brilliant, because people then all over the country and all different, like I call them the compassion industry, mm-hmm. Can use it. Like, and what a great marketing tool, right, to have that. So in the show notes, I'll definitely be putting links to be able to buy all those resources from you or to hire you physically to come in. So let's wrap this up, Rick. I want to honor your time. And this has been so valuable. I think it's going to help so many funeral homes realize that education and educating your community is going to make you head and shoulders above your competition. Because that's the part that changes everything, right? It's when you show up before the need. You're not chasing business, you're building trust. And the funeral home that does that well becomes the obvious choice, right?
Yep.
So if this helped you, your funeral home owner listening to this, or funeral director, and this helps, share it with a funeral home owner that needs it. Let's do what works and drop what doesn't. And we'll see you next time on the Death Care Marketing Show. Until next time, have a great day and God bless. Oh, and thank you, Rick, for being my guest today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Yes, you're such a blessing to so many, and I'm so grateful that you're on the show. And again, if you're interested in learning more about Rick's books, including his new one, we'll make sure to put the links in the show notes. All right, yeah. Until next time, again, God bless. Bye-bye.